Hi, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about invasives, combating invasive species in Wisconsin with Kelly Kearns, Plant Conservation Program Manager for the Wisconsin DNR. Kelly, a real pleasure to have you back in the studios with
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Wisconsin natural resources officials last month approved the state's first comprehensive rule to combat invasive species. The Natural Resources Board unanimously approved a rules package that sets up a master list of invaders, prohibitions on their movement, and nearly a dozen measures designed to slow their spread. It had to be heartwarming for you after spending lots of years on this particular item.
Right. We've been working on this for over 5 years now, and we've worked with hundreds and hundreds of individuals that have provided us a lot of input and provided us a lot of good scientific background as to what species really should be put onto this these lists and what species shouldn't. And we had a lot of stakeholders involved, people both that are affected by the invasives and people that could be affected by the rules themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just in the last 2 years alone, officials have discovered the arrival in the state of the emerald ash borer, Asian beetle that eats ash trees, viral hemorrhagic septicemia, an exotic virus that causes fish to bleed to death, and hydrilla, an aquatic plant that causes millions of dollars of damage in the state of Florida. Where did hydrilla appear?
It appeared in a private pond in Marinette County. It was actually a lined pond, and the landowners were concerned because there seemed to be this plant taking over in their pond, and so they contacted the people who had planted it with mm-hmm. native aquatic plants, and apparently the hydrilla had hitchhiked in with other native aquatic plants, and it just spread in just a couple of years, and it completely overtook this pond. So fortunately, it was in an area that was very easily contained. The landowner was very cooperative about working with us. Basically, we were able to get the pond drawn down, and we think that we have the hydrilla pretty well under control there.
All right. Our guest is Kelly Kearns, Plant Conservation Program Manager for the Wisconsin DNR. And if you'd like to join the conversation to talk about the new comprehensive invasive rule, then you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. And, of course, our email address is talk@wpr.org. When did Wisconsin first begin struggling with invasives?
Well, a lot of these species probably came into the country as soon as immigrants from Europe came over and brought species with them. And once they came into the Midwest, then they brought them into the Midwest as well. A lot of people felt like it was important to bring their food plants, their medicine plants, other things with them when they came over from the old country. And some of these species probably took a long time to really get established, but others probably started taking off fairly soon. Mm-hmm. And so we don't really have good records on how most of these species were actually introduced. For some species, like starlings, we know exactly who brought them in and when. Other species, like things like honeysuckle, that's been here for probably at least 150, probably 200 years, it probably was brought in by many people and spread by people selling it. So it's really been only in the last 50 years or so that people have really been recognizing what a problem invasives are starting to cause. Mm-hmm. And really the last couple of decades that has become more widespread, that the general public has been aware of it.
When was it known that there needed to be this big general rule that covered invasives?
We've been asked by people in the public for decades now to have stronger rules on invasive species, particularly on plants. We already have fairly good rules on non-native fish, wildlife, and pests, such as forest pests. And those have already existed, but we really haven't had good rules on invasive plants, and we've never had the authority to do so. In order to create rules, the Department of Natural Resources needs to actually get legislative authority. And so finally, in 2002, the legislature actually passed a bill that set up the Wisconsin Invasive Species Council as an advisory group to the DNR to help us actually develop this invasive species classification rule.
And therefore, 4 or 5 years later, why we finally have a rule and it's finally been approved.
Right. And actually, we didn't even get started on it in 2002 because we had to wait till that council was appointed, and the council didn't get appointed until 2004. So as soon as that council was appointed, then we started working on it, and we've been working on that ever since.
Now, with the approval of the DNR, then does the legislature still have to sign off on this or fund it, or are we just operating under the rule now?
No, any administrative rule that's developed by a state agency has to go through the legislature first. And so right now, this rule is over in the legislature, and it'll be assigned to a committee in the Assembly and a committee in the Senate. And each of those committees has the opportunity to hold public hearings if they'd like. And we haven't heard if they plan on doing that yet, but it's likely they probably will, because this is a fairly large rule that affects a lot of different species. And so we anticipate that after they have that hearing, then it goes to the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules. And then once it gets through all of those folks, then it gets approved. Or they send it back to the agency for us to make some more changes.
All right. Talking with Kelly Kearns, and if you'd like to join in, we've got a couple lines open for you at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Peter in Blue Mounds first. Hi, Peter. What's on your mind today?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a landowner in southwestern Wisconsin, responsible for about 200 acres of woods and 100 acres of open ground, and I'm just kind of curious, how will this affect me? We do have invasive species like buckthorn, mustard, wild parsnip, box elder, and so on, and what's going to be the real, in the field, practical issues for me?
That's a really good question. Basically, all those species that you mentioned are not going to be species that anybody would be required to remove. Most of those, with the exception of box elder, which is a native species, and this rule only covers non-native species, all of those species are put into the restricted category in this rule. And restricted species can no longer be intentionally bought, sold, or planted. But they can't. If you have them on your property already, then we're not going to be trying to tell you that you need to remove them. We may encourage people to remove them. We're putting out. We'll provide information about how to remove them, and especially if you have a new population of one of this. Say you're up in northern Wisconsin, and garlic mustard comes into your area, and it's nowhere else. Then we certainly would encourage people to try to control that. But for these species, it's not a concern if you already have that. Prohibited species, however, those are the ones that essentially are not here in the state yet and that we want to keep out. Those are things like kudzu, which some people are probably familiar with from the south, and giant hogweed, which is a plant that gets very large and causes blistering when people touch it. Those species are the ones that wherever they show up in the state, we'd like to get rid of them and work with whoever's property they happen to land on to cooperatively work with them to try to control those species so they don't become a problem both for the land owner and their neighbors.
Very good. Thanks for the question.
All right, Peter. Thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Had an email from Barb. Is it illegal to plant Mexican bamboo in Wisconsin?
At this point, it's not, because the rule has not been approved yet. And first of all, it's not really Mexican bamboo. It's Japanese knotweed is what a lot of people call Mexican bamboo. It's from Japan, and it's not a bamboo. But it is in the group of species that would be in the restricted category. And therefore, once this rule does get approved, assuming it does, then it would be illegal to intentionally plant that.
All right. Let's go to Mike in Soldier's Grove next. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I guess I was wondering if you could shed some light on a little bit about multiflora rose, and if there was any role by the DNR to introduce it when it was introduced, or where it came from, or just some little bit of information about multiflora rose.
All right.
Sure. That's one of the species that, unfortunately, a lot of conservation organizations and agencies did encourage people to plant many, many years ago, back in the early 20th century, where the Soil Conservation Service, the federal agency, and also the Department of Conservation, which is a precursor to the DNR, also had encouraged people to plant, and because they thought it was very good for erosion control and as a windbreak and for for wildlife habitat. Unfortunately, many years later, they found out that that probably wasn't a good idea. And so they stopped selling it, of course, but by then it was already spread. And it's primarily been a problem in the southwestern part of Wisconsin. The southeast and southern counties have experienced it as well. It is a species that we're starting to see it move further north as we have warmer winters. And so we anticipate that it will be spreading north. Does that answer?
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much, Mike, for your call. Appreciate hearing from you. Let's go on to Dave. I'm sorry. We'll go to Jack in Random Lake next. Hi, Jack.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling to see if the problem of some of the trees, like European larch and some of the other species of trees that are coming in and being promoted to plant, if they in fact can become a problem or if there's any problems known to be associated with them.
Well, European larch specifically is not one that we've seen starting to spread at all. We know that it is. It's very closely related to our tamarack, but we haven't seen it really spreading. If you have evidence of that, then it'd be interesting to hear that. Do you have other species that you're concerned about as well?
That I can think of offhand, but certainly there's a number of trees, you know, that are being brought in and promoted as, you know, alternatives to what we have as the normal trees here.
Right, and I'll mention a couple of them that we did actually put onto our restricted or prohibited list. One of them is sawtooth oak, which is an Asian oak species that is being promoted, especially for because it's very fast-growing and produces acorns very quickly, and so it's a species promoted for a turkey habitat. And we're a little concerned about that species, not only for its own spread, but also because the oaks tend to hybridize quite a bit, and we really don't want our native oaks potentially damaged by the hybridization. One of the other species that's being promoted for fast growth for forest production, and particularly for cutting for pulp, because you can cut it down and then the tree resprouts, is princess tree or paulownia. And we've been seeing that being promoted a lot, especially down south, but there has been some around here too. And we don't think it's one that could really be extremely hardy here throughout most of Wisconsin. But again, as the winters warm up, we could potentially have some problems with a species like that.
I see. I do have one other question.
What is that?
Do you see any species being promoted for biomass production? Certainly a requirement or desirable characteristic of biomass would be something that would be fast growing and would reproduce relatively quickly.
Yes, there's, of course, a number of species that people are working on for biomass production. And people who are concerned about invasive species have been very involved in those conversations and in some of the research. One in particular that they have been promoting a lot in the Midwest is the miscanthus. There's a number of different miscanthus species. And people are definitely watching that to make sure that it's not going to become a problem. And that species primarily spreads vegetatively. It could potentially be a problem, but we'll definitely be working with the people who are doing the research on biocontrol, on biofuels, and making sure that nothing gets spread unintentionally without being aware of it.
Jack, thanks very much. Appreciate hearing from you in Random Lake. Our guest today is Kelly Kearns, Plant Conservation Program Manager for the Wisconsin DNR. And if you want to get more information about the rule, go to the DNR website?
Correct. So,
and what is that?
That's, I had it right here a second ago.
Is that the dnr.wi.gov?
Yes.
/invasives.
Invasives.
Okay.
Yes.
And you'll get everything that is up to date there. dnr.wi.gov/invasives. All right, we'll go back to the phones and take some more calls in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk about combating invasive species in Wisconsin with Kelly Kearns. Wisconsin Natural Resources officials last month approved the state's first comprehensive rule to combat invasive species. The Natural Resources Board unanimously approved a rules package that sets up a master list of invaders, prohibitions on their movement, and nearly a dozen measures designed to slow their spread. And as Kelly has said, legislation to go along with that rule is currently in the Assembly and in the State Senate, and public hearings may be scheduled on that, so you may have a chance to make comments about that if you have not already done so.
Actually, that's approval of the rule. That's actually approval of the rule itself rather than legislation.
Okay.
There actually is also a bill that's in the legislature that covers some other invasive species issues as well. And that's one that's called SB 123 that's in the legislature right now.
Okay. Let's go to Victoria in Green Bay next. Hi, Victoria.
Good morning. I was wondering if there is a website somewhere that offers examples of these invasive species so we recognize them when we see them.
Sure, there's lots and lots of websites like that. Probably the best one to go to would be the DNR's website, and that would be the website that Jim just mentioned earlier. That's dnr.wi.gov/invasives. And if you go to that, then you can click on plants and then go to a photo gallery and see all sorts of photographs of multiple invasive species. Or you can click on animals and go and see photographs and fact sheets for each of these species as well.
Thank you very much.
All right, Victoria, good luck. Thanks very much for your call. If you'd like to join in, we have a couple lines open at 800-642-1234. And, of course, our email address, talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Dave in Madison next. Hi, Dave. What can we do for you?
Yeah, two questions. First question, has the state of Wisconsin or the federal government ever file lawsuits against invasive species that entered our country? And the second question is there any native plant from the United States that other countries consider invasive? And I'll hang up and listen to my answer.
All right, Dave.
Okay, well, the first question, has there ever been a lawsuit about invasive species being introduced? My guess is there probably have been. I'm not aware of any, particularly in Wisconsin. It's hard to do it because typically we don't know who actually did the introduction. There are some cases where it's very clear where the introduction came from originally, but generally, that's not so clear. It's kind of like pollution. A lot of it is non-point pollution. You don't have a particular point where it's come in. As far as United States or North American plants that are invasive elsewhere, yes, there are a number of our plants that are invasive, especially in Europe, because it's at a similar latitude as us. And some of them have also become invasive in the southern hemisphere as well, particularly in Australia or in places like South Africa. But a few of the species, the plant species that I'm familiar with that are invasive in Europe are black cherry, which is a very common forest tree here, our Canada goldenrod, and one of our squirrels, that's one of our common squirrels here, is actually quite invasive in Europe as well.
Dave, thanks very much for the call, and let's try Ralph in New Berlin. Ralph, what's on your mind today?
Hi, thanks for the show. My question is this. I have maples that are popping up all over my yard and in my bush lines. And, you know, at first, when the first one came, it was, you know, a very fast-growing, large-leaved maple. And now I'm getting all kinds of little guys that are growing in the bushes, and they're, you know, is this an invasive species? Is this, you know, is that a typical, you know, forestation thing that these guys use for, you know, for expanding their numbers? Or, I mean, how can I tell if this is something that I, you know, pull up and get rid of these things?
Okay, well, most of the maple trees put out lots and lots of seeds this time of year, and they seem to time it perfectly right when they know that gardens are being plowed and fields are plowed and there's a lot of bare soil for them to lodge into so that they can get established and start sending up their little seedlings. And there are many species of maples that actually produce a lot of seeds and spread that way. And right now, I would say that you've got silver maple, which is a native, and box elder, both, that are pretty commonly spreading that way. And you could identify the box elder by seeing if it has a three-parted leaf, that where the different parts of the leaf are actually separated from each other. The one non-native maple that could possibly be spreading is the Norway maple, and that is certainly invasive in some parts of North America. In New England area, it's extremely invasive. We've seen it in some areas of Wisconsin where it's spreading and being invasive. We haven't seen it a lot here yet. That one you can identify by if it's got a milky sap on the stem, when you break the leaf off of the stem. And I'd say look around at the trees that are around you, the mature trees, and try to identify what maple trees are around you. And that's where it's going to be the same species as what you're having seedlings coming up of.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right, Ralph. Thank you very much for the call. This rule that was approved by the DNR board creates an invasive species list broken into a couple of categories, invaders already in the state and invaders yet to arrive. How are you going to know the invaders yet to arrive? Is there a list of those somewhere?
Right. For the rule itself actually puts species into these two different categories, with the prohibited category being those species that are, for the most part, are not here yet. Some of those species we know of a few sites in the state where they're at. For example, emerald ash borer. When we started on this rule, we didn't have emerald ash borer in the state as far as we knew. And now we know of a couple of sites. But it's still on the prohibited category because most of the state, it's not there yet. And so species like that are on that prohibited list. Other species that are known to be widespread, at least in a significant part of the state, are on the restricted category.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones and take some more calls. And again, the number for you to join in is 800-642-1234. Let's go to Amy in Iola. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Jim, and hi, Kelly. I am a geographic information system specialist, and I wonder if the DNR has a database, a GIS database, on the invasive species, and who would I contact to get involved in that?
Okay, well, that's a great question. Because there's so many different groups of invasive species, the databases are separate. There's one particular that is for aquatic species, and it's tied in with, it's called SWIMS. It's our water resources GIS database, which covers all the water resources in the state, and aquatic invasives are tied into that program. If you're interested in forest pests, they have their own, the forest health staff has their own database on occurrences for that. For terrestrial plants, we're still trying to figure out a system that's really going to be working for us, because there's already several different systems out there for mapping invasive plants, but none of them that are really nationwide or statewide. And so what we have done is developed a program specifically for some of these early detection species, like such as these prohibited species that are just coming in. We're using a program called sitsci.org, and it's, you can actually get on there and get into our particular project and keep track of species and enter data through there on species that you find. And so if you're interested in that, you're welcome to get in touch with me, and we can certainly get you more information about it, about how you can get involved with our Weed Watcher program.
All right. Thanks, Kelly. Could you repeat that .org?
SITSCI, as in citizen science. So CITSCI.org. And then you would look for the Wisconsin Invasive Plant Program within that. There's multiple different databases within that, sitsci.org.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Amy. Thank you very much for the call. Good luck to you, and appreciate the offer to become involved. Let's go to Aaron in Hartford next. Aaron, what's on your mind today?
I got two questions. One is, if you can't beat it, can you join them? Like, for instance, with dandelions, you can't get rid of them, but you can make tea and wine out of them. Can you make mustard out of garlic mustard or something to that effect? Is there a use for any of these invasive species that is practical other than ornamental?
Well, yes, actually, most of them, a lot of them have uses, and that's why they're here, is because they were brought here from other countries in order to be used. And so, for example, garlic mustard is both a medicinal plant, but it's also a green, an early spring green. If you are pulling garlic mustard right now, just tear off the leaves, and you can turn those into pesto. You can use them like spinach, and they have a very garlicky flavor to them. And it's very good, although you might get real tired of it if you've been spending hours pulling garlic mustard. You can also use the seed to make mustard as well, by grinding up the seed and making that into mustard. Many of these species have medicinal or edible properties, or are ornamental for landscaping, which is why they were intentionally brought here for those purposes.
Okay. And my other question is, isn't it an invasive species? If you go back in history, wouldn't that be just the natural transfer of wildlife? And it just takes time to sort itself out?
Well, the difference is that most of these species that are invasive are moved to a different part of the world than where they originally evolved. And so, for example, garlic mustard over in Europe has lots and lots of critters that eat it over there. There's many insects, there's disease organisms that keep it in check. And so in Europe, garlic mustard is not a problem. It's you see it occasionally, but it's really, you never see it abundant like you do here. When garlic mustard was brought here, it was brought over without any of those insects. And so it found this niche of these open forest floors, and it could just expand and take off. And so the real problem is when something is transported from one area to another. And oftentimes there's other things such as increased soil nitrogen or disturbance or other things that actually help to encourage some of these invasive species to really take off and thrive.
Okay.
All right, Aaron. Thanks very much. We appreciate hearing from you. And you can join in as well at 1-800-642-1234 as we talk with Kelly Kearns, Plant Conservation Program Manager for the Wisconsin DNR. We're glad to get her in today because I'm sure that otherwise she probably would have been out pulling garlic mustard or some other species. True?
When I'm away from the office, yeah.
All right, let's go to Jacob in Appleton. Hi, Jacob.
Hi. My question is to some of these prohibited plants certainly have become integrated into certain natural environments. And I was wondering that when you have to remove a plant, that affect like the greater like animal life and life around these prohibited plants?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's going to be site and species specific. In most of the cases where for these prohibited plants, they are not yet widespread and not yet in large populations. And so there oftentimes it's just a new population starting up, and assuming we can work with the landowner and start working on control, it's something that it's just a matter of keeping that plant from going to seed and killing the few individuals that are there. If we find that a population is too extensive to control, such for example, the emerald ash borer, the infestation in Newburgh, we don't think that that population is small enough at this point that we can really completely contain it and eradicate it. And so in that case, it's going to be more of a trying to contain the spread kind of situation. And any time that you're doing controls on these species, you try to do it in ways that minimize the impact on the rest of the environment. So doing cutting when possible or very targeted herbicide application so that you only affect the species that you're trying to kill rather than all the other species in the area.
Okay.
All right. Jacob, thanks very much. Appreciate hearing from you. And let's go to Marcus next in Green Bay. Hi, Marcus. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm calling about the tall grasses that grow along the rivers and the marshy areas. I was told that by someone that they were the number one invasive species in the state. And I looked them up online, and I can't remember the name of them when I did get that information, but, you know, what's the story, like, where'd they come from, and they grow so tall so quickly, and the other thing about them is, couldn't they be used as a biofuel, because I noticed I was having small, campfires in my yard, you know, in Green Bay, you're allowed to do that if it's in a container, and when I would use those grasses to get the wood going, they were almost explosive. They wanted to burn so much, you know. It's like, it just seems like it'd be a good fuel. So where'd they come from, and are they invasive?
I'm going to assume that you're talking about Phragmites, because you're in the Green Bay area, and Phragmites is the big tall grass growing along the roadsides all over the Green Bay area. And, well, it's an interesting plant because we're pretty sure we have native Phragmites here in North America. And the native Phragmites actually looks different and grows differently than the non-native Phragmites, although it's the same species. It tends to be much more scattered populations. The plants aren't really super robust, whereas the non-native ones, such as the ones up in the Green Bay area, completely dominate any kind of slightly wet area and grow extremely tall, extremely rapidly, and are very hard to get rid of. And it's a huge problem for the people up in that part of the state, and especially people who have lakefront property. And as the lake waters have receded, then their entire shore now is covered with phragmites, and they can no longer see the lake. And so it's a big problem for a lot of folks. So there's a number of things that are being done about phragmites. Certainly, there's herbicides that are being used on them. Mowing is something that can be used in combination with other techniques. And we're looking at the national level. We're working on some methods of biological control to control the species. As far as using it for biofuels, it's certainly something that I've been asking about too, because it seems certainly makes a lot of sense to me. Apparently, with biofuels, and especially with any kind of ethanol type production, in order to take those plants and turn them into a liquid type of an alcohol, then it needs certain bacteria that are species specific bacteria to break it down. And they don't have that yet developed for phragmites. For actually burning it directly, it would be a matter of trying to figure out the logistics of actually cutting those things, transporting them to the nearest kind of a facility where they actually could burn them, and making sure that that facility was actually set up for burning those biofuels. Hopefully, it's something that we'll see happening a lot more in the future. Right now, I don't think any of our fuel energy companies are really set up for that at this point.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right, Marcus. Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you as we talk with Kelly Kearns, Plant Conservation Program Manager of the Wisconsin DNR. The question is, are all exotic species invasive?
No. The exotic and invasive are two very different terms. Exotic refers to something that's not native to the area where it's living in. And so there's lots and lots of exotic species in Wisconsin. About a third of our plants that grow in Wisconsin on their own are not native to Wisconsin. So they've been brought over for some reason or another. But probably only about 10 to 15% of those actually are invasive or weedy in agricultural areas or disturbed areas. And so it's a small subset of those exotic species that are invasive. And there certainly are native species that can act invasively as well. We typically refer to those as aggressive native. So things like box elder and Canada goldenrod that in certain situations can be very aggressive and act just like some of the non-native invasive species. But the difference is that those non-natives, again, have been brought over without the insects and the diseases that keep them in check, whereas the native ones eventually, hopefully, will succumb to that here.
All right. Back to the phones to Mike in Westby. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I have a question about ash trees and the emerald ash borer. I just love to plant trees, and I like to keep track of what's native and what's not and plant just native trees. And I've planted a lot of white ash trees, and in fact, I have some little white ash seedlings right now. And it's my understanding it is a native tree. And I was wondering, is it going to be illegal to plant white ash trees now? And do they need to be cut down and removed because of the emerald ash borer? Or is it just the borer itself that's restricted?
Okay, that's a good question. It will not be illegal to plant ash trees unless it's a situation where you're in a quarantine area, and in that situation, you would not be allowed to move ash trees that are in that area. Say, if you normally would buy your plants from a nursery in Newburgh. Right now, Newburgh happens to be under a quarantine because that's where one of our two known infestations of emerald ash borer is. And so a nursery in Newburgh would probably be under quarantine, and you would not be able to buy ash trees from there. However, if you are outside of those quarantine areas, certainly you're welcome to plant ash trees. May not be a good idea to keep planting only ash trees, since we have a pretty good idea that most ash trees are susceptible and will probably be killed by this borer when it gets to them. And we are trying to contain it, but it's tough to contain an insect that you really can't detect until it's already been in the tree for a number of years.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Mike. And let's go on to Terry in Green Bay. Terry, what's on your mind?
Yeah, good morning. I'd like Kelly to comment on the use of some of the herbicides to control some of the invasive species. One in particular, of course, I'm familiar with Roundup. But there's a product that I have here from one of the farm stores. It's called an LB400 2,4-D weed killer, a low volatile ester. Is this going to be a little more detrimental to the environment, do you think?
Well, it depends on what you mean by detrimental to the environment. It's a different type of herbicide than Roundup or glyphosate. Roundup is used very frequently because it essentially kills all growing plants that it touches. And so it's a broad general herbicide, but it also, as soon as it hits the soil, it basically inactivates. And so if you were to spray Roundup on some plants that were on the soil, it gets taken into the plants, kills those plants, and actually goes into the root system and kills them that way, but then it doesn't really remain on the soil. 2,4-D, on the other hand, is specifically a broadleaf plant killer, and so it kills broadleaf plants but not grasses, and so that's why it's used a lot in lawns. That actually has more residual in the environment, and if you look at the labels about those species, then you see that the 2,4-D has a little bit higher toxicity level for humans and for wildlife, probably. It certainly is one that people are cautioned to use it much more carefully than Roundup because of the potential for it having longer-term residual.
Good. That's what I wanted to know.
Okay. Terry, thanks very much. We appreciate hearing from you. Let's give Richard a chance in Monona. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, good morning. Calling about jewelweed and garlic mustard. We live near a woods, and the woods has been kind of depleted over the last several years, losing a lot of oak trees. And now the ground cover is jewelweed and garlic mustard. And I'm wondering if there's any way I can get rid of it other than going out and pulling them one at a time.
Well, are you concerned about the jewelweed or the garlic mustard or both?
Both.
Okay. Well, the jewelweed is native, and it's an annual plant, and it'll die back at the end of the season, and it spreads by the seeds that it produces that season, whereas the garlic mustard is a biennial, and so it actually takes 2 years to grow, which is great because it gives us a window of time when we can try to identify it and kill it before it can go to seed. Either of those species, if you allow them to go to seed, will be eventually spreading more. And so hand-pulling in a small population, hand-pulling really is the best way to go out and do it, get rid of it. And you want to do that well before the plant has started to go to seed. If you wait till it's gone to seed, then you're just going to be spreading those seeds around. And if it's in a larger infestation where it's pretty much that's all that's on the forest floor, and you know that you're just not going to be able to get it all with hand-pulling, then that's the time to target use of herbicides. And herbicides can also kill the jewelweed as well, although jewelweed is actually one of the few plants that's really good at competing with garlic mustard and actually topping out over it. It actually gets taller than the garlic mustard does quicker, and so it actually is one of the few species that really can hold its own in a garlic mustard infestation.
And herbicides, anything that's particularly favorable?
I would say that glyphosate or Roundup that we mentioned earlier is probably one of the best things to use, simply because it's a little less toxic in the environment, and it's also you can use it fairly quickly. And one of the problems with Roundup, though, is that it really takes about 2 weeks to really take an effect and completely kill the plant. And so you don't want to wait until really late in the flowering season for garlic mustard. You want to be doing it now or earlier so that you can kill a plant before it actually starts producing seed.
Hey, Richard, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate yours. I'm sorry we can't get to more of the calls, but we've run out of time. Kelly, it's been a real pleasure, and good luck to you in the future.
Thank you.
We've talked about combating invasive species in Wisconsin with Kelly Kearns, Plant Conservation Program Manager for the Wisconsin DNR. And you can find out more about the invasives that they're dealing with at dnr.wi.gov/invasives. Our thanks to Brittany DeAnda for on-air phone production today. I'm Jim Packard. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.